this morning we have a little different approach to the problem, perhaps, than what you may expect. The Olympic Games that are on here are an example, a magnificent example of dedication and discipline on the part of these young people who are competing. Many of them worked for years with the hope that they might achieve on this event. Perhaps the entire theory is subject to certain criticism, but very largely, let us face it this way. These young people, about 6,000 of them, are here competing for the gold, as they call it. In the audience are about 120,000 people also competing for the gold, but not in the same sense. These more thousand are working in an entirely different approach. And for the most of them, self-discipline plays a very small part in their conviction of how to get what they want. To them, the end must be achieved in any way possible. And, of course, only a very few achieve even in this possibility. But I think in the problem of television, we have a lesson that we might give a lot of thought to these days. There's a great deal of criticism of television programming, but that is not going to be the burden of my discussion this morning. I have something else that seems to me to be infinitely more important. And that is that man is no longer simply a biped without feathers, as Diogenes likened him. Man is a thinking creature. He should not be brought up by a trainer like a dog. He should not be taught only to obey. He should not be fed because he obeys. He should not have a life of luxury, perhaps, because he happens to obey a rich person. The actual problem is that the human being has a mind that was given to him to think with. It was an active organ, an organ to do something. It was not simply a receptive faculty to listen, to hear, and to see. Most people in various fields of activity never participate in those practices and policies which stretch the mental power and make it do things that we want it to do. In the modern world, we train the mind by education to give us a profession or a trade or a craft or membership in a union or whatever it may be. We listen to the instruction, we get the job, we stay with the job, and in all this procedure we have done very little thinking. We have followed policy, we have obeyed rules, we have done what the boss told us to, and we may have taken a few special courses in computerization or something of that nature. But the real creative faculties of the mind have not been used at all. So at the end of one of these harrowing days, in which most of the harrow has now been eliminated, we go home, sit down in front of the television, and perhaps spend anywhere from 2 to 6 hours watching what? We're not watching anything that was going to make us really think a good deal. If it's an educational program, it will be turned off very quickly. We watch sports. We listen to the news, which is usually highly influenced politically. We go through a few horror dramas, westerns, a few very poor humor programs, and then settle down to the great run of family epics, in which we learn nothing, but may choose one or two characters to pull for because they seem to create sympathy, and one or two whom we love to hate because we don't like them. Now, this constitutes a big intellectual experience. And by the time we have finished with that, we're so exhausted we fall into bed. In the daytime, we have all kinds of domestic programs. Programs which may or may not bear upon any factual situation. We may have a few instructive ones on non-commercial programming. But we listen, we watch, and that just go out and get a cold beer or something of this nature. Nothing happens upstairs in ourselves. Nothing is being developed as a factor in the growth of our own thinking. We are not thinking, actually, and if we are thinking, we are not doing anything about it because most of the thoughts are non-factual. So here we go all through an entire lifetime, surrounded by all types of information, which we accept only through the eyes and ears. And when the time comes, we do very little to solve our own problems. If we get sick, we go to a doctor, and maybe we will do what he recommends. And if we do not like what he recommends, we'll get further advice on the subject. But actually, we have inside of ourselves a mind that does not become healthy unless it is exercised. And exercise is use. Exercise is not sitting and watching. Exercise is not reading. Exercise is thinking. Thinking with the faculties that we possess and which we are supposed to enrich every day of our lives. Everything that happens to us has some kind of meaning, but we accept it through the ears or the eyes, and it fades away. The mind is not involved in the process of personal growth in most cases. We use the mind only as a computer or as a machine, never as a creative thinking equipment. So somewhere along this line, we have to face what we might term a gradual deterioration of the mental powers within ourselves. And this deterioration is very obvious in society as we know it today. We are not doing as good a job of living, thinking, acting as our ancestors did. They had to do better. They had to think or they could not survive. We have created a situation in which thoughts are liable to destroy us rather than protect us. And in the face of this, we settle back to a daily routine in which the growth of our own inner life is very much weakened. When we get a man's working for an Olympic gold, we find him exercising every day. And the result of his exercise is that his body becomes more and more an instrument of his purposes. He gains control of himself. The pianist does the same. He uses the body for purposes within himself. Today we do not use the bodies we have for the advancement of principles of use to ourselves. We think only of enjoyment or relaxation, or go around and play cards, or do something of this nature. Some of these things could give us a little intellectual stimulus, but in most cases, we wouldn't recognize it if we had it. This type of thing has gotten very much worse. Until today, the creative thinker is a person seldom seen or met. A person whose mind is being used every day to find new values, accomplish new works, do new things that have not been done, improve the quality of living, solve the personal problems of his life. These are the things that help to exercise the mind. But to drift along from work to television to bed and then up and again the next day is not doing anything to make people. It is only continuing a humdrum, which is only one step above animal existence. This means that in some respect, we need creative programs. Now, a creative program is something that we do because basically we want to express ourselves. We do not wish merely to do what everyone else does. We want to do something that will satisfy our own inner impulses. But for the most part, these impulses just are not active enough to give us any positive directive. So it seems that one thing we have to do to get away from this hypnosis of the tube
is to realize that we have faculties within ourselves that do not need to be subjected to this continual negative conditioning. That we are simply capable of thinking rather than merely of watching the antics of someone else. It's so everywhere today. In music, we have the same problem. We go and listen to a good concert and we applaud the performers, but for the most part, we do not think of putting ourselves under the discipline of music. Another individual is much interested in the dance, but he can barely stay on his feet on the ballroom floor. We see people that are interested in all kinds of crafts. They collect them, but they don't create them. Now, something has to happen to change our way of life from admiring the creations of others to the development of creative capacity in ourselves. Of course, we had the old 24-inch rule that was not only used by the old builders and artificers, but also appears in the Quran. And that is, the 24-hour rule is the day, the 24 hours. It is divided into three sections of 8 hours each. One of these sections is used to work and to earn a living. One of these sections of eight is used for rest, sleep, and repose. And the remaining third is dedicated to worthwhile activities and self-improvement. On this basis, some people are sort of missing the idea, because their idea of improvement, of rest, relaxation, and the ability to grow as people, this does not seem to have any great amount of meaning in most cases. We cannot grow particularly in sleep, although it may help a little. We can grow a little in work if that work has creativity in it. Otherwise, it is just simply routine. It is done only for the sake of making a living. So we have these other 8 hours to do something with. Something ourselves, 8 hours to be ourselves, to dream our dreams, to build our thoughts and hopes for the future, to be with our friends and children, to do all kinds of things that warm up and intensify the natural inclinations for beauty, affection, and friendship that are within ourselves. So what do we do? We pull up the chair with a television dinner and remain there until we go to sleep in the chair. Now, this is a complete loss of one of the most valuable factors in human life: the individual thinking for himself. Of course, we realize there is a tremendous penalty on it. The individual who thinks for himself may have to think his way out of a number of difficult situations, but he can. To think for oneself is to break through the chain that has gradually developed, the chain of education in which the individual thinks what he's told to think, the job in which he does what he is told to do, the family in which he does that which one of the more positive relatives tells him he should. Then, little by little, to become locked in responsibilities which mostly exist because he has never faced issues directly. So something has to be done to change this if the individual really wishes to have a significant life. Now, in the old theater, it wasn't so difficult. And the old theater had many advantages which we have no longer with us today. One of the advantages was for the actor himself. He had a year, 2 years, 5 years to live the part he was playing. He could gradually refine the characterizations until they were nearly perfect. He was actually understanding Shakespeare, or whoever it was he was indebted to for his scenario. He was doing things that meant self-searching, trying to understand and live the character of another person. And he had plenty of time to do it. The audience also would go to the theater maybe once a month or every couple of 3 months when a particular program came along. There was never a type of program that people went to every night or every day. They chose the things they wanted, and a program lasted in the theater sometimes for 5 or 10 years before everyone who wanted to see it got to do so. Then came the motion picture, silent films. There was still a little margin of creativity in the silent film, because the watcher had the privilege of trying to interpret in his own mind the words of the actors. This process was one in which a certain identification was achieved. The audience began to feel the ideas, thoughts, and emotions of the characters on the screen. Then came the talking film, in which every bit of suspense of thought was taken out. You knew exactly what everyone was going to say and what they meant. Therefore, a little corner of the mind was lost again. And now in television, we have a further involvement, namely programming continuously. And this programming done primarily and basically as an advertising medium. We do not have any real participation. The actor does not do what he could do, because he must finish a major film in 2 weeks. He will play his part and never play it again. And it will be shown at one time to the larger part of the audience that will see it. This is entirely away from any depth of watching or depth of doing. The entire program is gradually mechanized. It is streamlined and is gradually formed into a mere interval between advertisements. All this is doing something to people. Young people get started with it. And as a result of this type of thing, personal living is becoming less and less significant. We are gaining our morals from the motion pictures and television. We are gaining our education from false statements and misrepresentations in films. We get our inspiration from everything you can think of, except that which has lofty or meaningful significance. Gradually, the television is taking over the moral habits of mankind. It is telling what we are going to do. It is contributing heavily to crime. And the average individual just sits and watches it. Maybe he will never be a criminal as a result of watching it. Maybe he will have enough morality in himself not to fall for this type of pressure. But many do fall for it, as our law courts know today. The point is, here we sit and do nothing. We have a limited allotment of time. Maybe 70, 80, 90 years. But one of these days, it's going to be gone. And it's an amazing thought, perhaps, to realize that out of an 80-year life, perhaps we have spent 15 years of that, of our waking time, watching television. There should be something else in life that is more interesting than this. There should be something that makes life significant. We look over the various problems of living. We do not know for sure, for example, that if we are going to have a future incarnation sometime, that we will use the actual knowledge we're accumulating in this life. The only thing we can take with us is what we achieve within ourselves, what we do to grow or intensify our principles and integrities, to gradually achieve a victory of integrity over the haphazard indifference with which most people are burdened. So here we have a wonderful opportunity to do something. A time which is not one that we have to worry over. The individual who watches television today is not really doing it because he's exhausted. The labors of the day haven't worn him down to the condition where he wants to doze all the evening. It is simply that this is the cheap, convenient, easy way of wasting time. And most people do not realize that time is worth more than the wasting of it. And because of that fact, individuals drift into older years without the maturity, without the integrities, without the ideals and principles that are so necessary to a well-rounded life. At the same time, they are setting a bad example for the next generation growing up in this confusion. Now, how can we start to be a little more creative in our thinking and acting? Well, there are various ways in which we can become involved. Largely, personal experience is based upon involvement. If we do not get into situations, we will never learn how to get out of them. If we do not do something ourselves, then we simply drift along a pattern which has never led anywhere and never will. We have a world around us of people in trouble. We have all kinds of problems, individual and collective, which need thought, need some kind of involvement. Now, involvement doesn't necessarily mean that we simply read about something. Here again, it is vicarious. The modern literature that we get is very largely non-directive as far as our own personal living is concerned. And the psychological and metaphysical literature is so burdened with exaggerations and mysteries and wonders that, again, it does very little to help us in our daily conquest of circumstances. Involvement may mean to do something with your hands, to do something to help to build. Involvement means an art not watched but practiced. It means some kind of an activity for which we do not buy a ticket but go out there and do it ourselves. Therefore, anything which causes the person to control, discipline, and direct his own attention to the improvement or fulfillment of some inner conviction, any such program as this is creative. It is involved. We become part of it. We do something that otherwise would not be done. In our childhood days and in the days of our parents, one form of involvement was the neighborhood. People all did things together. They were part of a pattern and did all kinds of simple but sometimes very kindly things. Another form of involvement was involvement in the church affairs of the community. The individual giving time, days, evenings, weekends to trying to help some religious purpose. This was involvement. Today, the simplest way to meet all of these responsibilities is to write a check. This is not involvement. It is simply buying immunity to involvement. And we do it all the time. And we realize or believe that we can't do it any other way. Now, involvement used to be all the family getting together while grandmother or great-grandmother played the piano and everyone sang. Involvement was the home theater with the kids all playing the roles. Involvement was all kinds of relationships in young people's groups. It was also involvement in the activities of the older generation, where people were doing things together for some purpose. Maybe it was all to get the bedspread shown at the county fair, but it was involvement. The individuals did something themselves to earn the respect and regard they wanted. They wanted their own victory, and in order to be victorious, they had to do something that they could win. If they never did anything, they could neither win nor lose, and everything was at a dead standstill. Now, we all have problems today that perhaps we do not know exactly what to do with. One way of solving this problem is the involvement in self-improvement. The individual deciding something he's always wanted to do and doing it. If he has always wanted to advance some specialized art or science or philosophy in himself, he can take courses in it, he can participate in discussions, he can join groups working with these situations. If he wants to become involved in charities or in helping underprivileged, he can become part of a group that is doing this and not just sending the check. As far as that's concerned, if he wants to, he can send the check also. But he must be down there doing it to become involved. And in the process of helping worlds to grow, we all must become involved. Involvement, of course, immediately presents a difficulty with us because of the way we've always lived. very few people are really ready for involvement. When they what they call involvement is simply interference. They try to get into a situation they don't understand and take it over. This is not creative involvement. Now, every person, or nearly every person, has some kind of an aptitude. An aptitude different from the one by which he makes a living. I know one minister who had all his life wanted to go to the sea in ships. He had in his little ministerial study models of all kinds of boats. And he was building models. He was doing all kinds of things. He was studying it in his spare time. He was involved in something that he had to do some work with. Now, the work might not change the course of history, or might be of value only to himself, but he was doing it. He was doing it every day because he enjoyed it and because he felt that it increased his understanding of the sea and the ships. So we have there an involvement of a person very sedentary, given largely to biblical discussions and marriages and baptisms and funerals, who found time to open the horizon of a secret longing and did it by the only involvement that he could find without leaving his job, and that was to make the ships in literature that he was reading about, understanding them and participating in the adventures, at least vicariously, of the mariners who had gone before. There are all kinds of things that the individual can do, but he must do something, or otherwise he's just going to sit and try to be entertained by impossible amusements. Now, this is too much of a problem to go over lightly. There has to be something done about it, and every person has the reason to do it. Now, many people who live alone and are by nature a little on the neurotic side retire into some small world and use the television as their only outlet. They have no real contact with real life. They consider themselves to be loners. They have no recognition of a world of values and factual things. So they simply retire further and further into themselves until they can no longer bear the bruises of contact. They have to remain alone until death takes them. Now, this is absolute futility. It has nothing to do with a good life, well lived. These persons should get out of this solitariness that they have gotten into, and if they have a religious link in their hearts, go into charities, go into helping other people who are worse off than themselves, join activities, groups, taking care of the underprivileged, but never go off by themselves, sit alone, mood and brood, and watch this impossible entertainment. Do something to get yourself into the world of which you are a part. Now, if you do that, you may also have some temptations come along. But temptations are necessary. The individual who is so completely isolated that he is never tempted not only doesn't commit any evil, but doesn't do any good. Therefore, it is necessary to become involved. Now, most people I talk to, one someone will say, well, I've always kind of wanted to have another language. All right, get it. Study it. Take courses in it. Go to night school. Spend part of the time that otherwise you would spend watching whodunits, and go to this school. Or get someone who knows the language and who will help you. Find ways to master the language. And when you can go out and converse with a native in that language, you've won your gold. You've got your medal. You do it. You have it. You have achieved something yourself. Now, there are many ways in which achievement can come. Most of the great achievements involve art, music, and things of this nature. But literature is another interesting field of achievement. To sit all the time reading a book, It gets rather dull, because the book may not be too much better than the television. In fact, the television may have been based on the book. And when you watch them both, you don't recognize any similarity. But instead of sitting always and reading, decide on incidents in your own life and start writing. Do something yourself. If you've enjoyed certain episodes and incidents recorded in popular publications, you will usually find in those publications a little paragraph saying that they will accept further incidents of personal happenings of an unusual nature. Put the personal happenings in your own life down. And if the personal happening, the most important, is that you suddenly decided to do something instead of listening to others, you might even win a prize. There's just no way of telling. But do it. Get something so that when you come home at work or from work, that there is immediate involvement. One of the nicest involvements, of course, is the family involvement in those conditions. But today, the whole family has become so tied into the present pattern that the different members do not want involvement. Each one wants to live a solitary existence under the same roof, doing exactly as he pleases, and trying desperately to over-influence the fellow members of his family. This is, therefore, not easy. But in families starting out, certainly, mutual involvements can be the secret of an enduring marital relationship. If both persons are working in exactly the same general direction, if each one is willing to listen to the suggestions of the other, if each one is grateful for companionship and insight in these various problems, the marital situation is going to be far better off than it will be if the two persons sit down in front of a television and compete with each other as to which station they're going to watch. The height of the problem is a family in which there is a television in every room and no two members are watching the same program. This is what happens when people do not actually think or do not make any effort to get hold of situations. I think almost everyone, if they will look inside themselves a little bit carefully, has a submerged hope, a submerged ideal, and a secret desire to achieve something worthwhile. Most persons have been under the pressures of circumstances and have had great difficulty in being themselves. Everything seems to force them to follow patterns of other persons. If by some circumstance the individual suddenly finds himself alone, he should not regard himself as deprived. He should take the attitude that he is now able to be himself, perhaps for the first time in his life. But there's a catch in this also. When he tries to be himself, he discovers he has no gift for it. He has never done anything to build the kind of life that can stand on its own feet. He has always leaned on something, always lived by some concept or by some relationship. And when he is alone, he is not free, he is just plain lonesome. He has never found the key to doing the things he's always wanted to do, but was prevented by the burdens of his relationships with others. So at the beginning of life, the person should always recognize that the idea of the one-pointed career is essentially false. The individual who becomes absolutely involved in his business, or in some relationship, or some political activity, or something in which there is no variety, no change of pace, this person will naturally turn to some entertainment like the television simply for a change of pace, because he has no variety except what is imaginary and comes to him through the tube. This person should and must find the way to express some purpose that is worth his consideration and his daily dedication. Well, these all type of things we can start physically to get a job. One of the physical things we have to do is to take sufficient interest in our physical existence to apply certain disciplines to our conduct. The individual who simply lives the best he can until death takes him has no discipline. All achievement is based on discipline. Therefore, at the beginning of life, he can discipline his mind, put certain controls over himself, and try his best, not necessarily to lengthen his life. This is not the point, but to prove that he is able to control the body in which he lives. If he can control his body, he has made a certain physical achievement. If he has been able to correct defects in himself, he is doing something. He is not simply reading a book. He is putting what he learns to work and making it work for him. And as long as he sincerely labors with the problem, he will improve himself. Beyond this, of course, we have not only the physical body, but the emotional body, which is a very troublesome one, and which causes perhaps most of the complications of life. Irrational emotions are probably the greatest source of tragedy that we know. Emotion must be placed under discipline. The most powerful discipline for emotion is religion. But you can study religion all your life and remain just as emotional as you were before, and no better. After all, no amount of membership, no amount of prayer, or any of these devices will have the effect you want unless you discipline your emotions yourself. If you have hate, then the great creativity is to transmute it. If you are revengeful, this will continue no matter what church you belong to until you outgrow it within your own emotional life. Everywhere emotions are tricky. Jealousies, griefs, bigotries, fanaticisms. They are all hard to work with. They will never be cured by a book nor a membership. They will be cured only by discipline, by the individual taking hold of himself, thinking things through, and determining the course that is best for himself. Having made this decision, he must then fortify it by action. He must perform according to the level of his new convictions. If his new conviction is that he shall meet and overcome the dislike he has for another person, then he must go and do this, not leave it as an emotional asset until it is made real. Therefore, every control, every discipline must lead to a reality, to a proof of achievement by the correction of a weakness. Otherwise, it doesn't mean anything. But there are all kinds of ways in which we can think through these things and to try to work out some programs by which we can accomplish this, either through philosophical assistance, through education, through psychological conditioning, through the broadening of our religious background, not as theology, but as a way of life. So perhaps the height of the emotion life of the individual is the regeneration of the impulses of affection and proving it by action. Never leave it something beautiful in the soul that you really believe, but you still can't speak to those people you don't like. So this type of thing, it puts a control. An emotional control is worth winning, but it's never to be won simply by watching a television program in which emotions go wild. Horror, terror, destruction, always in the atmosphere. This does not help us to mature the emotions. The mature emotions have also their own expressions. Love of art, love of music, love of nature, love of all kinds of service programs, love of the animal, protection of natural resources. All these require thoughtfulness. And sometimes this thoughtfulness is going to interfere with a long-established habit. Then there is the impact, and you must either have a deep enough emotional foundation to rise above the old habit, or you will fall back into the previous condition. Emotions must be disciplined. And they are disciplined not by giving vent to them. The old psychological attitude of the 20s and 30s that you had to be nasty in order to be healthy is no longer valid. It is not necessary to get rid of pressures by being unkind. The real answer is to enrich the inner life so that the unkindness falls away of itself because you have simply outgrown it. So participation and creativity are expressed through outgrowing the smallness or the limitations that have previously interfered with your conduct. Then you get up another step to the mental. And the mind, of course, is very difficult to control. because very few people realize that the mind is anything except a servant. The mind is something that just justifies whatever we want it to justify. Our mind is something that proves that our mistakes are correct. It also proves to us that our fanaticisms are justified. It proves to us that our mistakes are gorgeous. Everything that we do, the mind says, "Amen. I'm for you all the way." Well, this is one way of being in trouble all the time. The mind has powers of its own. The mind can think, but it's only on rare occasions in a great emergency that we use it to think with. As life goes along on a comparatively monotonous level, we do not wish to think. We simply wish to be thoughtless. We want to do whatever we feel like doing at the moment, and anyone interferes with this is a tyrant. If we want to worry, we don't worry. And the mind tells us just what is important at that moment to worry about. Whereas it should be telling us how to solve the problem instead of worrying at all. But if the mind can never protect us from the worries of situations we get into, then the mind isn't doing us much good. And the reason it's not doing it much good is because it is gradually dying of anemia. The mind is having no opportunity to be itself. It is not being encouraged to think. It is simply being encouraged to agree with us. And that phase of the mind is too childish. We cannot mature with this type of thinking. So the mind has to be disciplined into right and wrong. If we believe in the Ten Commandments, then the mind has got to show us how to keep them, not how to break them. And if we do break them, the mind has got to criticize us for doing it. The mind has got to tell us that we failed and not let us get away with the idea that we've made a gorgeous exception to the rules of life. We haven't. Never can. So if we have a code, and it's a good one, the mind should be a sentinel guarding our fulfillment of that code. If it says in the mind that we must do a certain thing because it is the basis of our character, that thing we must do. In the same time, we may think of the mind as being an idealistic thing. It is not all rationalization. Well, the Sermon on the Mount is a very good discipline for the mind. It tells us what we should do about situations.